I know what you're thinking. Why does my radio sound so much louder this morning than it normally does? This is Ari Hoffman, your afternoon drive host, filling in for John for today and tomorrow. Fear not, John will be back on Monday. Don't forget, you can always catch my show from 3 to 6 p.m. right here on Talk Radio 570 KVI.
Going to make a quick amendment. John won't be back Monday. Mark Christopher and I will be in on Monday and Tuesday, and John will be back next Wednesday.
John will be back next Wednesday. But don't worry, you got Phil and Mark Christopher. There you go. Yes, I am not up on all the scheduling stuff.
Right? You just know the stuff that pertains to you.
Exactly. Yeah. Like having to be here before the sun comes up, which I am not designed for. This is not how I roll. This is when I'm normally going to
sleep. You're
going to
do a majority of show in the dark today.
Yes, that is depressing. Extremely depressing. I didn't know this time on my clock actually existed. Yesterday, as I was getting ready to sign off, I saw this story from Politico. President Joe Biden's senior aides are conducting a vigorous internal debate over whether to issue preemptive pardons to a range of current and former public officials who could be targeted with President-elect Donald Trump's return to the White House. Okay, let's analyze this for a second here. Donald Trump has been president before. We know what he does. Joe Biden has been president. We know what he does. When Donald Trump was running for office in 2016, he famously made the joke during a debate with Hillary Clinton, yeah, if I was president, you'd be in jail. And the crowd loved it, and that pretty much ended her campaign. And then when he took office, did he arrest Hillary Clinton? Did he investigate Hillary Clinton? No, he did no such thing. Joe Biden and Kamala Harris kept saying about Donald Trump, oh, he went after his political enemies and he targeted them with the Department of Justice. He's going to weaponize the Department of Justice. And then Kamala Harris did that with this campaign. What has Joe Biden and Kamala Harris spent the last 4 years doing? Targeting anybody they don't like with the levers of power of the government. For example, you one of those parents who went to a school board meeting because you didn't like the hyper-sexualized education? Yeah, let's not forget that Dr. Jill Biden, our very own Edith Wilson, who's running the U.S. right now, on behalf of her teacher union buddies, went to the White House and asked Joe Biden to have the Department of Justice investigate those parents because they didn't like dissent. Do you remember the Ministry of Truth? The short-lived idea where it was going to be, we don't like what you say on social media, so we're coming after you. Never mind all the charges that were brought federally against Donald Trump, which have nothing behind them. Or how about the ones that had a little bit behind them? Like the documents case where Donald Trump takes a reporter around Mar-a-Lago and he goes, aren't these the greatest documents? They're the best documents. I didn't declassify the documents, but they're great. Look, what are they probably? Probably Donald Trump going, I have images of Kim Jong-un's house. I love his house. It's very nice. I love this picture. It's great. Do you think he's selling secrets to the Russians? No. We know that Hunter Biden's the one who's up for grabs, who sells whatever he wants. So who are the ones who abused power? Who are the ones who used it to go after their political enemies? We know that that's the Democrats, not Donald Trump. However, Donald Trump has made it very clear he wants to clean out the swamp. Does that mean going after all these Democrats? Unlikely. But Joe Biden isn't taking any chances, and neither are these Democrats. So now they're considering pardons. According to Politico, Biden's aides are deeply concerned about a range of current and former officials who would find themselves facing inquiries and even indictments, a sense of alarm, which has only been accelerated since Trump last weekend announced the appointment of Kash Patel to lead the FBI. By the way, they are all freaking out about Kash Patel. So much so the mainstream media is losing their minds. Newsweek. You know, I usually like Newsweek. Their opinion section is very balanced. I don't usually have the issues with Newsweek I have with other outlets. But apparently somebody made a parody account of Kash Patel's father, and Newsweek fell for it and wrote a whole article about this parody account of Kash Patel's father, thinking it was real because they're in such a panic over Kash Patel. White House officials, however, are carefully weighing the extraordinary step of handing out blanket pardons to those who've committed no crimes. So let's analyze that for a second. You haven't committed a crime. Liz Cheney, who's on this list, by the way. So we're going to give you a blanket pardon through the end of the year. Well, why wouldn't Liz Cheney then go and commit some crimes if she has a blanket pardon for the rest of the year? Oh, let's go. Who does not like my dad? Let's go off them. Because I got a blanket pardon. No problem. Me, I would just run a bunch of traffic lights. A sense of alarm, which has been accelerated around here. A sense of alarm. What's Trump going to do? If you haven't done anything wrong, you got nothing to fear. But now they're just going to give out pardons willy-nilly? By the way, this breaks the system. Pardoning Hunter broke the system already. But you know how this breaks the system? Imagine now the loser thinks that the winner is always going to come after them politically. So when Trump's out of the White House, if J.D. Vance or Ron DeSantis or whoever it is runs next time and the Democrats win, then what happens is the president just writes a blanket pardon for everybody in the administration. And that's going to be the new MO going forward. The deliberations touch on pardoning those currently in office, elected and appointed, as well as former officials who've angered Trump and his loyalists. I love how Politico writes this. Question, did any of them commit crimes? If they didn't commit crimes, they got nothing to worry. Oh, wait a minute. Are you guys admitting that you went after Donald Trump with no actual crimes? You just manufactured stuff out of nowhere? Those who could face exposure include such members of Congress's January 6th committee, such as Senator-elect Adam Schiff, former GOP Representative Liz Cheney. What did Adam Schiff do? I don't like Adam Schiff. He lied to the American public, but I'm not sure that's a crime. He is a politician, after all. What would you actually charge Adam Schiff with? Or what would you actually charge Liz Cheney with? Or is this just the Democrats doing the typical thing, where they are admitting they went after Trump with absolutely nothing, and they're admitting he can come after them and weaponize the Justice Department after them with absolutely nothing? Trump had previously said Cheney should go to jail along with the rest of the unselect committee. Trump says stuff like that all the time. Did he go after Hillary Clinton? Are you guys considering pardons for Hillary Clinton? Because there's actually a there. With Hillary Clinton. With Hillary Clinton, there's tons of stuff you got. You got the server. You got the Epstein client list. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't say that. Wait, I have no dirt on the Clintons. I am very happy with my life. I am not suicidal. Me and Jussie Smollett. I am not suicidal. Yes, I'm very happy with my life, Hillary. You're a wonderful person. I think you've done great things for this country. You and Bill. Unless you don't like Bill today, in which case he's terrible, and you're awesome, Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Exactly. Also mentioned by Biden's aides for pardon is Dr. Anthony Fauci, the greatest doctor in all the land, greater than Dr. Peppa. He is the greatest doctor we have ever had, let me tell you. Now, I don't like Fauci. But what crime would you actually hit him with? I'm just asking. Now, if you could think of a crime you would hit Fauci with, give me a call or a text on the Warrior Injury Law Studio line at 206-421-5757. That's 206-421-5757. The West Wing deliberations have been organized by White House counsel Ed Siskel, but include a range of other aides, including Chief of Staff Jeff Zients. The president himself, who was intensely focused on his son's pardon, has not been brought into the broader pardon discussion. Okay. Do you get what's happening here? These are all the underlings worried they're going to be charged. So I have questions. You haven't even brought in the president into these discussions. What have you fools done that you're worried about being prosecuted for? If there's no smoke, there's no fire. What do you guys think you did? Do you realize what's going on here? They know that Joe Biden will sign whatever you put in front of him because he is non-existent. He fell asleep yesterday while meeting with African leaders. He was asleep at the table. He looked like my grandfather used to before he passed away, God rest his soul, where you'd say, Grandpa, you listening? And he'd go, I was listening to every word. Listen to every word. I was just resting my eyes. Just resting my eyes. Are you kidding me with all this?
It's a whole different time zone, man. Yeah. It's like a different day for him.
Dude, if he didn't have a bedroom on the plane, then I'd give you the jet lag thing. But he's got his own suite on the plane. And I assume that Sleepy Joe is sleeping on Air Force One. I assume he's not walking around with turbulence and all that, because one little bump, and that dude is going down.
He's not on the treadmill in flight?
I would
some
think
exercise
not.
And burn some calories?
We haven't seen Joe Biden on a bicycle in quite some time. Octogenarian.
That's why you go with the treadmill.
Yeah, I don't
elliptical?
Think he's doing, I don't think he's going on any of that. No. He's the rowing machine kind of guy. You know, that's what it is. Yes. He really liked that Boys in the Boat movie.
Stay seated.
Yes. Biden's ultimate decision, though, could prove as consequential to some of the country's most high-profile public officials as his choice to pardon his son. Consequential, you mean corrupt? You mean breaking the entire system? I did see a great meme the other day. Darth Vader pardons his son for blowing up the Death Star. I thought that one was excellent. That was a very good one. A White House spokesperson declined to comment but did not deny the accusations. This January 20th cannot get here fast enough. January 20th cannot get here fast enough. We're going to find out how deep the swamp actually is. However, Donald Trump is going to be at a little bit of a disadvantage trying to do all this. Democrat Adam Gray has won California's 13th congressional district race by only 187 votes, defeating incumbent Republican Representative John Duarte. Now, here's the problem. This is the last race to be called in the U.S. Hang on, what's today's date? December 5th.
Yeah.
A month.
1 month, right.
A month after the election. You've had countries with more people than the U.S.
I think India has a famous
situation
of being able to count billions of votes or a billion votes in a day, basically.
India counted a billion votes in 24 hours. And California took them 4 weeks to count all this. You know what this was? This was a no. Keep counting till you get the result we want. Recount, 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 recount. See, what happened was, do you really think the Republican observers are going to stay there all month? Now, we saw this at the KVI listener party, right? The average Republican isn't paying attention to local politics. The average Republican goes, Trump won! Everything's going to be great! Everything's going to be fantastic! Because they're not paying attention to what's happening locally. You think those observers stayed there for the entire month? Or do you think they have jobs? Or do you think they have things to do? So eventually they're going to say, dude, this is nuts already. I got to go back to work. This was a volunteer gig that was supposed to be one day, and instead it's taken a month. This is worse than jury duty. And that's when the Democrats swoop in and steal races. 187 votes. Give me a break. You think there aren't 187 illegal immigrants who voted in California? You think there aren't 187 people who moved out of state who voted again? You think there aren't a whole bunch of convicted felons who voted? Of course there are. But this is what they do. So now they're giving the Republicans a very, very, very narrow majority. Because basically, the Republicans in the House have 220 seats, and the Democrats have 215. That means if the Democrats are successful of peeling off some Republicans in purple districts and going against the Trump agenda, he's got problems. Now, what I think right now is I've seen Republicans united in a way I haven't seen before, at least with the transition. However, we saw with Matt Gaetz, we're seeing with Pete Hegseth right now, that some Republicans are not fully on board with the Trump agenda, and they're starting to get weak-kneed. So what if the Democrats can bring enough pressure to bear in these purple districts and peel off some Republicans? That means the Republican agenda, the Trump agenda, the MAGA agenda is going to get stopped in its tracks. Now, mind you, House Speaker Mike Johnson is saying that he's pushing ahead with everything, that he would like to cut spending for Planned Parenthood and PBS as Republicans look for ways to trim the fat of government spending through the newly created Department of Government Efficiency. Now, for me, I don't know why we're spending any money on PBS whatsoever.
I mean, they have fundraisers and, you know, listener drives or viewer drives and all that jazz. If that's really what people want, then they should be able to fund it themselves with advertising and everything else.
But here's something else. Every single other TV outlet has commercials. And guess who else does? PBS.
Exactly, yeah.
You guys can run commercials just like Fox News can.
They
just
can
like
do the
MSNBC
same model
can.
Everybody else does.
Exactly. So why do you need our money? Here's something else. For years, they had Sesame Street. Now, I'm not sure if Sesame Street is still on PBS or they moved over to HBO or whatever that deal is. There was some sale there a while ago. But do you know how much money Sesame Street makes? Do you have any idea?
Merchandising is off the
exactly.
chain.
Yeah. Elmo. The amount of money they made from the Tickle Me Elmo. You don't need my tax dollars. Also, let's not forget when PBS was created. It was when you had three networks, and that was it. They wanted to guarantee that whatever mom and pop, whoever is down in their basement like Wayne and Garth, wanted to have a show or whatever it was, that it would get viewed, that you could have children's programming because kids didn't want to watch Walter Cronkite. I understand that. That is not the case anymore. You can find whatever you want for whatever you want to watch. Nazi television, you can find it somewhere on the interwebs. You want to watch communist Marxism? Well, that's just like the Democrat Party. Whatever you want to find, it is out there. Why do we need to fund this? Planned Parenthood? I don't know why the government needs to fund that either. It's not because I disagree with them. There are plenty of organizations I disagree with, but a lot of them don't get government funding. Are we funding pro-life groups? Of course not. So why are we funding Planned Parenthood? These are things that are easy cuts, but how many things are out there that we could just slice and slice and slice? You know, there's tons of nonprofits that I am really committed to. So you know what I do? I run fundraisers for them. I run events for them. We do sales. We do marketing. We do advertising. We sell commercials. We're selling commercials right now. In fact, here's some commercials coming up. You're listening to Ari and for John on Talk Radio 570 KVI. Welcome back to The Commute with Carlson. This is Ari Hoffman, your afternoon drive host, filling in for John. You can catch my show every single afternoon from 3 to 6 p.m. right here on Talk Radio 570 KVI. And for everybody out there on social media, we're actually streaming the show's video right now live on X and Facebook and YouTube and, of course, Rumble. Phil, what are the socialists on social media doing right now?
Well, you got to be patient. We do that in the final hour of the show, but we got lots of news here. And the first tweet that I found comes from, let me check the handle again. It says, Ari Hoffman, the Hoff Father.
Who's that guy? And I wouldn't trust anything he says.
Apparently, this is something you posted yesterday. And it says, the deep state is trying to take out Pete Hegseth as the nominee by Donald Trump for defense secretary using, quote, anonymous sources. But everyone who has worked with him is going on record now debunking and refuting any of these claims. You have interviewed him. This is something you put in the post. You said, hey, I've interviewed him. The interviews were always professional. You didn't see any red flags. You write, the swamp is going after him. The GOP should have his back. And I had independently, separately, been thinking something almost identical to what you posted. This seems to stem from The Atlantic. Is that it?
What happened was
it The New Yorker or The Atlantic that kind of had this?
What happened was NBC had one hit piece, okay. And then The Wall Street Journal had one of these pieces saying that Ron DeSantis was going to be replacing Pete Hegseth.
Right, but to be specific about these claims of excessive alcohol consumption, things like that.
Oh, I think that one originally started with NBC, okay. Actually. Yeah.
So my thought was, hey, you know, for The Atlantic or if it's The New Yorker or any of these other anti-Trump media outlets, boy, it would really be nice to see this level of extensive reporting on things like the Hunter Biden laptop, you know, Biden canceling the Remain in Mexico policy for asylum seekers or maybe the origin of COVID. So why is the mainstream news media unable to dig into those stories? But anytime there's a chance to embarrass Trump or something related to Trump or scrutinize a decision by Trump, all of a sudden they're checking every nook and cranny to try and come up with whatever they can come up with. So the double standard is painful and obvious for the rest of us who are actually paying attention.
Yes, absolutely.
And then you have the whole anonymous sources thing, and this is essentially, you know, almost like a Kavanaugh thing.
But also, so, let's remember
Christine Blasey Ford came out.
Right.
But she was pointing to, well, there were other people there, but then the other people that she was claiming must have known something. No one seemed to know anything.
But the Wall Street Journal article really bothered me because I like the Wall Street Journal. Mm-hmm. And it said anonymous sources overheard Mar-a-Lago people talking.
Okay.
So you're saying it could have been Thanksgiving and people are drinking going, hey, you know what? If Pete Exit doesn't get through, let's get Ron DeSantis.
Right.
And
it doesn't mean it was much anybody more flimsy than that.
Exactly.
So, and there's another example of the continuing erosion of journalistic standards that we've got. The social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. You and I are both car guys, particularly classic car, muscle cars.
Absolutely. And nobody wants to collect an electric car.
A listener had sent this in on the KVI text line, 206-421-5757, and I had seen something about this, but I didn't understand the context until the listener sent something. But in California, the Latino Chicano community is now wondering about what's going to happen with classic vintage cars. And a website is posting a story that car enthusiasts in the Chicano community in California are speaking out after receiving a letter and gathering information from California's Air Resources Board, CARB. This is essentially an unelected appointed board in California. And CARB recently sent surveys to owners of classic cars, registered cars that are 1978 or earlier. And we know the muscle car era was the 1960s. And it was asking them how often they drive, where they go, how many miles are on the odometer. And this letter from the government of California suggested that it's all part of a larger effort to assess how older vehicles contribute to emissions and whether they should be restricted from certain areas or more heavily regulated. Now, this car enthusiast site called the Daily Chela obtained a copy of the letter. Gavin Newsom, the governor of California's name is in the upper corner. And in a response to critics, a member of Governor Newsom's social media team shared a column simply stating that low-riding vehicles, which are popular in the car enthusiast community, are currently legal. However, Newsom did not deny the authenticity of the letter and told the Sacramento Bee that the CARB's latest draft plan doesn't go far enough. So in this continuing battle against cars, classic cars, muscle cars could be in the crosshairs of the, you know, politicians in California. And you know that the politicians here in Washington would essentially do the same thing if California goes forward on more of a ban or a restriction on those muscle cars and vintage classic cars.
And you know what comes after that? Whatever car you're driving, if it's not electric.
Sure.
It's just the next step in the way. Lots more to discuss. As the show continues, you'll listen to Ari Hoffman in for John Carlson on Talk Radio 570 KBI. Welcome back to The Commute with Carlson. This is Ari Hoffman, your afternoon drive host, filling in for John. John will be back next week. You got me today and tomorrow. Don't forget, you can also listen to my show every single weekday afternoon from 3 to 6 p.m. right here on Talk Radio 570 KVI. I will confess, I do not look at weather reports unless some extreme weather event is being reported in the headlines. I really don't look at what the weather is before I leave the house in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Occasionally, if it feels kind of cold, like the heater's on in the house, I'll go, hey, let me open a window. Oh my God, it's cold. Let me throw on an extra sweat or something. I do not look at the weather forecast. I really just don't. It's one of the upsides of having all-wheel drive vehicles. It does not matter what's out there.
You know you're going to be all right.
Exactly. So unless I hear about some massive weather event like a bomb cyclone, I don't pay attention. But something that bothers me was I had no idea it was going to be below freezing this week. I just wasn't paying attention to the news. But apparently the people in the King County Regional Homeless Authority and other homeless Inc. industry, or the entire homeless Inc. complex, they were paying attention. And I saw this article in Como News that infuriated me. King County cold weather shelters opened doors to homeless during Thanksgiving snap. So they opened emergency cold weather shelters. I'm not mad they opened the shelters. What I am mad about is the fact that this thing that barely anybody was paying attention to that was going to be cold this week, unless you're watching the 6 o'clock news every night or listening to traffic and weather together on whatever station, that most people weren't paying attention to this, but they were able to open the emergency shelters with almost no notice. Phil, how many days of warnings did we have on the bomb cyclone?
At least two.
At least two, if not three.
Yeah.
And when we reached out to the King County Regional Homeless Authority and said, you were telling people that if they're staying outside to stake down their tents better, find a rock to hide behind, find a building to shelter behind. You couldn't open the emergency shelter, so they said, well, we don't have a plan for high winds. You couldn't enact the cold weather plan or any of the other plans you have. It is ultimate government incompetence. And the fact that they were able to do this on, what, one day notice, Phil? As opposed to the bomb cyclone where they had multiple days notice? Shows how full of it they actually are, or rather, how incompetent they actually are. You guys have one of the biggest budgets of any agency in King County. And yet you guys, we don't have a plan. We don't know what to do. Bomb cyclone, hang on. Let me go to my index here. We don't have an emergency contingency plan for a bomb cyclone. The goal is to get people inside. So just open the shelters regardless of what the weather event is. We had somebody email us who works in one of the local hospitals, and they said, Ari, we have an inclement weather plan. It's not cold, it's not hot, it's not smoke, it's not snow. It's an inclement weather plan. And we do usually the same thing. It's just, okay, is it cold or is it hot? Which one do we have to deal with? So it's ridiculous to me that they couldn't figure this out. Absolutely insane. Meanwhile, I saw an article from our friends over at the Center Square that made me go, So, Seattle's largest quarterly count of homeless encampments reveals a significant drop in homeless tents in the city since the end of 2023. Right, because they're all in RVs. No, that's not what it is. What it is King County Regional Homeless Authority has been very effective at exporting Seattle's homeless problem out of Seattle. So they sent him over to Federal Way, and they send him over to other cities. But here's something else. Hey, Phil, I drive in every day.
Mm-hmm.
You drive in every day.
Yeah.
Have you seen a drop in tents? Because I see the same ones every single day.
In places where it's been persistent, and I'll give it some examples of where I'm at up in North Seattle, yeah, I do see tents get cleared and then returned. And I would say that some of those intervals now, they're staying cleared longer than they have in the past.
I have a very different experience.
Yeah.
The places that always sucked continue to suck.
Yeah.
And then it spreads to new places nearby.
And I could give you another example just in and around the immediate area where we are in Lower Queen Anne, that I do see more homeless tents around here, the building that has the KVI studios.
Yeah. So what the hell are they talking about?
Migrated from somewhere.
Now, right. Now, mind you, I trust our friends over at the Center Square. This is a report based on data from Seattle, based on data from King County.
Yeah.
But you know that scene in Die Hard? And yes, tis the season to be excited about Die Hard. You know that scene in Die Hard when John McClane finally gets a cop to come and you got Al Powell driving around and he's not doing anything. He's just in his car eating the Twinkies. And then John McClane says, who's driving this car? Stevie Wonder? Well, who did this study? Stevie Wonder? Seattle's Unified Care Team counted 193 documented tents throughout the city in September. That's it? I don't believe you. There's like 193 in Georgetown and Soto alone. Give me a break. They say the count represents a 63% decrease from 523 tents counted at the end of 2023. You know what I need to do? I need to reach out to our friend Andrea Suarez, and I need to reach out to Jonathan Cho.
Yeah.
And I need to say,
she's on the ground every day looking at this stuff.
Right. I got to say, hey, how's the Chinatown International District. Is it getting better?
I mean, it doesn't sound like it's getting better downtown 3rd and Pine, for instance.
No.
I had family here at Thanksgiving. They wanted to go down when the weather was kind of not rainy anyway and not cloudy and check out Pike Place Market. They did that. They took the light rail down and they walked from basically 3rd and Pine down to the market. And they said, you know, looked about as typical as it is ever does.
Right. And this is like the study that says over 90% of Jews voted for Kamala Harris. And I said, there's no way that's right. It's just there's no way with everything going on. So I opened up the study and I took a peek at the study. They left out, ready, Los Angeles. They never surveyed any Jews in Los Angeles, South Florida, New Jersey, or New York.
So where are they?
I don't know where else these Jews are living. Oh, we only surveyed Seattle Jews. Now, mind you, even if you surveyed Seattle Jews, I know my synagogue. I can name like six liberals in my synagogue because most people voted for Donald Trump now. So I'm kind of wondering where they did the survey. You can make any survey work just based on your sample size. And let's remember, these guys typically don't even get out of their cars to do these surveys like the point in time count. They just go.
That's a good example about how the point in time count.
Exactly. They just go, there's a tent. Now, you don't know if it's being used for work or play or sleeping. Mm-hmm. You don't know. That could be where they run their job of the chop shop or prostitution or whatever. But you go, all right, there's three homeless people in that tent. Well, how do you know there's three homeless people in that tent? You're just assuming that with whatever formula you use. Makes no sense.
Hard science, right?
Exactly. Follow the science. Well, see, Ari, here's what you gotta do. If you're doing a count of the homeless, you gotta make sure they're protected. So what you gotta do is you get yourself the first booster, then you get yourself the second booster. But that gets expensive for the government. So what you do is you go into a homeless encampment and you say, hey, do you have any extra booster shots? And they say, we got whatever shots you want. We got whatever pills you want. And if you survive whatever they give you, then you're protected. Come on, give me a break. Latest count contradicts data showing a worsening homeless crisis hitting the King County region. According to the latest federally required unsheltered and sheltered point-in-time count conducted in January, there were 16,385 people experiencing homelessness in King County. That's a 22.6% increase from the previous count in 2022. So would you like to know? This is why I love the Center Square, because they'll actually quote that stuff where other outlets don't. So would you like to know what's going on? Who's running for re-election this year? In January, who's starting to run for re-election? Bruce Harrell. So he wanted a study that he could say, and homelessness is down, and we support reproductive rights at LGBTQ, like he did at the Christmas tree lighting the other day. This is what's going on. You got people who are running for election. And don't forget also, my friends, you're going to be gearing up for city council races soon. And then the city council has to fill Tammy Morales' seat. Do you realize what's going on here? The Seattle Unified Care Team, which is funded by the city of Seattle, comes out with a study that contradicts all the data we know about homelessness. By the way, that number, 16,385. Do you know how many homeless people there were in Seattle when they declared a homelessness crisis 17 years ago and said they were going to solve homelessness in 10 years?
Yeah, I made a wisecrack about this on social media a couple days ago. Yeah. Hey, Seattle is 19 years in to its 10-year plan to fix these problems.
Oh, has it been 19 already?
Be more patient. 2005, yeah, exactly. A lot of this stuff cropped up in 2005 to the Committee to End Homelessness was 2005.
Right. So do you know the number of how many homeless people were in Seattle in 2005?
Oh, probably 1,000 or two?
It was 3,000.
Yeah, okay.
3,000. Yeah. So 3,000 was a homelessness crisis, yeah, and you guys have done such a good job that now you have 16,385, yeah, and we know that's an undercount. We had Andrea Suarez on the show when that number first came out, and we know it is an undercount. So what are we actually doing here, guys? You've spent billions and billions and billions of dollars, and things have only gotten worse. Oh, wait, here we go. Como News. A project aimed at enhancing walkability in Seattle's Pioneer Square has reached completion. Did you clear out all the homeless people? Did you get rid of all the crime and riffraff in Pioneer Square? Because I drove through Pioneer Square this morning to get here, and it looked as bad as it always does. Oh, they've done a construction effort designed to improve access between Pioneer Square and downtown Seattle on the new waterfront park. You know, somebody actually messaged me the other day, and they said, Ari, wouldn't it be great to do one of these urban renewal things of Pioneer Square? I mean, the buildings are so old and classic. If we could just clean it up, I'm sure it would be a great tourist spot. I'm sure it would be a great place. People want to go to restaurants and bars and stuff. So you literally have people messaging me talking about how bad Pioneer Square is. And then you've got the mayor and crew going, look what we did. Look how nice it is because we cleaned out the homeless for one day so we could have a press conference. This is what always happens. That's why Georgetown looked like garbage on Monday. They just moved them over to Georgetown. What do you want to bet? That the people from the Seattle Unified Care Team didn't go to Georgetown and didn't go to Soto and didn't go to Ballard and didn't go to all the other hotspots. They're just like, well, we're standing here in front of City Hall and I don't see any tents. Woohoo! Homelessness is down! Lots more to discuss as the show continues. You're listening to Ari Hoffman in for John Carlson on Talk Radio 570 KVI. Welcome back to The Commute with Carlson. This is Ari Hoffman, your afternoon drive host, filling in for John. You can catch my show every single weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. right here on Talk Radio 570 KVI. But before my show, you can always catch our friend Lars Larson from 12 to 3. And he joins us now on the Warrior Injury Law studio line. Lars, what do you make of this thing that Joe Biden is now going to consider pardons for basically everybody in his administration, high-profile Democrats, Republicans that disagree with Donald Trump? I mean, I'm looking at this and going, aren't you just giving a blanket immunity to commit whatever crimes they want until the end of the term?
Well, except he can only give for past crimes, as I understand it, which means like the Hunter Biden pardon went through Sunday last week, or last Sunday, December 1. So, but all of the things like Fauci needs to be called up and demand, we need to demand answers from Fauci. He should not get a pardon. But there is no practical limit on presidential pardons. And by the way, everybody's noticed that he started this process very early. Usually presidents do these in the last couple of weeks of their term. He's doing it early enough that you might suspect he's got a raft of them that he plans to push out.
Right. But here's what I don't understand either. Don't think Liz Cheney did anything illegal. I think she may have lied, but I don't know if she did anything illegal.
I think she did. I think she tampered with a witness. I think she contacted a witness. If I recall right, she contacted one of the witnesses on J6 and then talked to the witness. And in that case, you're tampering with testimony that somebody's going to give sworn testimony before Congress. I can guarantee you what would happen if you or I were accused of a crime and we said, hey, I'm going to call one of the witnesses who's testifying against me and have a chat with them.
Gotcha. So there may be some actual there. I mean, because when I was looking at this list, I mean, Fauci, yeah, you could hit him with a dump truck of stuff. But
sure.
Adam Schiff lied to the American people. But Liz Cheney and a few others, I'm just wondering if they're just saying, hey, you know what? This is what we would do. We would make trumped up charges. And we did against the guy who shares a name with that.
Well, see, and there's the key admission that Joe made in the letter that he wrote about Hunter Biden's pardon. And that is he admits his own Department of Justice has been infected with politics. And you say, but this was politics that to a large extent benefited Joe Biden. And really, he's drawing more attention that he probably doesn't want, but he's senile, to the idea that the DOJ for years stalled, slow-walked Hunter Biden's investigation. They allowed the statute of limitations run on a number of the crimes that I'm confident that Hunter Biden committed, failing to declare income, failing to pay taxes. I mean, these are serious crimes, and they tried to soft-pedal even the gun crimes. So here's a guy who advocates for more gun laws, and then he advocates that when one of the gun laws is enforced against a member of his family, that he'll stand up and object loudly. You know, it kind of turns the Democrats into hypocrites. And the next time they bring up gun laws, I think every American should say, you mean the gun laws that Joe Biden thought were unfairly used against his son?
Well, let's be real here, Lars. They were unfairly used. Who hasn't been a drug addict and then bought a gun illegally claiming you weren't a drug addict and then sleeping with your brother's widow? She takes the gun away because she's worried about it, dumps it in a garbage can near a school, and then the Secret Service comes in to take the documentation showing the gun purchase. Who hasn't done that, Lars?
I know, and don't you think I get tired of congressional investigations because they never seem to amount to anything. But what I really would like to know, which agent retrieved that gun and under whose orders? And did he or she break the law in doing it? These seem like small things, but I think they're major things. When you have people like a Praetorian Guard running around and cleaning up the messes created by the king's son, that's what happens in monarchies. But in a constitutional republic like ours, you should not have members of the Secret Service cleaning up messes created by, and at that point, Joe wasn't even vice president anymore.
Right. He wasn't even part of the kingship or the monarchy anymore. Lars Larson, you can catch his show every single weekday from 12 to 3 right here on Talk Radio 570 KVI. Lars, thanks so much, buddy. Got a whole lot more to discuss as the show continues. You're listening to Ari Hoffman in for John on Talk Radio 570 KVI. Why is there no sun outside my window? It is pitch black, and it is 7 o'clock in the morning. Nobody should be at work when it looks like this out there.
We got stuff to get accomplished.
Dude, it is terrifying out there.
Irrespective of sunlight.
Terrifying. If you haven't figured it out yet, this is Ari Hoffman, your afternoon drive host, filling in for John Carlson. John will be back on Wednesday. You got me for today and tomorrow. Don't forget, you can always catch my show from 3 to 6 p.m. right here on Talk Radio 570 KVI. How about we do a little bit of local crime right now for you? So a story that just keeps repeating itself. We could just copy this, cut and paste, and send it out again and again because it seems to happen every single day.
This is what I call rinse, wash, repeat.
Exactly right. So what's this one from Cove? Como News security video captured the moment when a group of thieves used a car to deliberately ram into a Bellevue clothing store, causing tens of thousands of dollars worth of damage and preventing the store from gaining any profits during the most critical time of the year for sales because the incident happened on Black Friday at Lucky Dog Bellevue.
Yeah, so this basically happened a week ago.
Right.
Yeah.
So they just almost revealed it. They just revealed
right,
it today.
Yeah, just the news is finally getting out of my
exactly. So they reveal it. But I just want to remind everybody, do you remember Tammy Morales? God rest her position.
Her political career.
Her political career, right, exactly. Do you remember Tammy Morales being interviewed and her talking about how she didn't like police pursuits? And then somebody said to her, wait a minute, what about all these cars that are being stolen and being used to smash into stores? And she's like, I didn't know anything about that. I had no idea what you're talking about.
Thanks for joining the rest of us.
Oh, thank God she's gone. This happens. By the way, she is so full of crap, and I'll tell you why. I live in Tammy Morales' neighborhood. Right. I know where the gas station is, and I unless she never gets gas, I know that there's this really unseemly, not a pot shop, it's a smoke shop, right across from the gas station, right. And across from it, what have they done? They've installed the giant concrete barriers.
Yeah, those bollards?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, not the bollards.
Oh, the
big suckers. Okay. And I guarantee they didn't get a permit for this or anything. They're on the sidewalk and they're ringing the business because this happens so often. That's in her neighborhood.
Yeah.
And this happens on the regular. On the regular. So, oh, right, I forget. She doesn't come down, you know, to Rainier Avenue.
Talk with the ordinary folk.
No, she doesn't do that. She doesn't do that. She probably has a person who gets her gas. Oh, wait, what gas? She probably has a driver. Oh, wait, she doesn't go anywhere. She probably stays at home and goes on Zoom.
Are you saying she's in a bubble?
A smidgen in her multi-million-dollar house. Must be good to be a socialist. Anyway, shortly after 2 a.m., surveillance video shows a large white SUV backing into reverse, careening into the shop's front entrance. The impact was so forceful that the outside security camera was knocked out of its position, preventing any other footage.
And this is all back to Bellevue.
Now, all
that description
back,
in Bellevue.
Exactly. Yeah. Within seconds of the crash, security cameras on the side of the store captured three heavily hooded suspects ransacking their way through the store using garbage bags to stock up on the merchandise they were stealing. In total, the owners of Lucky Dog Bellevue believe the suspects were inside the store for more than 10 minutes, where they stole approximately $100,000 worth of items. So you're expecting this to be the best sales day of the year, and instead, this is what happens.
And do you know the kind of gear they sell there?
No.
Did you see what they sell?
I just see black and white security camera footage.
They sell sports jerseys and what I assume are probably a lot of more unique or high-end Nike footwear.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of stuff.
And,
you know, they must have been after the Trump sneakers.
Well, yeah. One of the signs at this place, Lucky Dog in Bellevue, it says buy and sell. So if you know if you've got a classic pair of Air Jordans or something like that, those have an increasing value if you take good care of them and all that jazz. And so I think this is what the store does is they buy and sell some of these more vintage shoes or vintage jerseys and things like that. So
which
that's
is like
kind of what they're selling.
When that comic store got broken into last year, I think it was. These stories all
start
blending together
Seattle?
After a while. Yeah.
I remember one in West Seattle that had a lot of comic books.
And what happened was they stole all the collector stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you don't know what this place had there, especially if they're doing trading, if they're doing buying and selling. So this is crazy. And it reminds me of how many other businesses do we not know were affected? For example, we had so few people in the news working over Thanksgiving weekend that so many people are on vacation. I think Jeremy Harris and me were the only ones
Como
covered
reporter.
What happened at the Apple store when the Hamasniks took it over. No other media outlet covered it. And when I've mentioned it to people, they go, I didn't hear anything about that. Meanwhile, on Friday, my phone was blowing up because people who were shopping at University Village, they go, Ari, there's something going on. There's a whole bunch of people with Hamas flags and Palestinian flags outside the Apple store at U Village. We don't know what's going on. And I found out what was happening. But nobody in media was working. So how many of these stories do we not find out about? Because I didn't see this story in any other outlet. I just saw it in Como News. Our local media is failing us.
Another one.
How come nobody in media report, except for me. By the way, Jeremy Harris did the story on the quick. Clearly, he like saw it or something and wasn't working that day, but was nice and wrote it up. I'm assuming something like that happened. Maybe he was working that day.
Yeah.
But it was clear. It was like, here's what happened. I had a little bit more time and did some digging. And I found out that Seattle Police Department didn't make any arrests because the employees of the Apple store
didn't want anybody arrested. They refused to trespass anybody or press charges, so nobody was arrested. And in fact, they closed the store early, so they lost all their Black Friday sales. How many other stories like this do we not even know about because the media is not doing its job? Insane, mind-boggling. Speaking of Black Friday, by the way, according to Cairo 7, post-Thanksgiving shopping is disrupted when an accidental active shooter alarms sounded at Pacific Place in Seattle. This past weekend was one of the box office busiest, and what happened was you got a whole bunch of people in a line to see Wicked. But Saturday at the AMC Theater Pacific Place, an hour into the movie, there were alarms going off in the theater. One person said a few minutes into the alarms, we could tell it was saying active shooter, please follow the procedures. So everyone just got up out of their seats and started running to the exits. By the way, wrong move. If there's an active shooter, are you running into where the shooter is, you dummy heads? At some point, you got to question that. Run, hide, or fight. Proctor said the alarm broadcasted warnings of an active shooter. She said it prompted her and her friend to run out of the theater and across the street. She said she was confused by the lack of a police presence that followed and learned that the alarm inside the shopping center and theater was accidental. One security guard inside Pacific Place told Cairo 7, it happens sometimes. Oh, that just happens. You know, Pacific Place doesn't have that many shoppers anymore. Pacific Place doesn't have that many people.
That foot track traffic has to be lower and lower.
When we go there for the movie screenings, there's like no stores. I mean, you got the Johnny Rockets upstairs and you got the Thai place upstairs or whatever else it is. But the basement is used for whatever traveling exhibit is coming through town, like the Friends exhibit. That's temporary stuff. Oh, right. There's the AT&T store downstairs. I mean, nobody's in this mall anymore. But, you know, oh, it happens. It happens. The active shooter alarm just isn't that something you should have fixed? Oh, crazy stuff. What else is happening in our area? A human skull was found on the side of the road in Washington. So in Trayton, Washington, the Kitsap County Sheriff's Office, according to King 5, is investigating.
It's over on the peninsula, right?
Yeah, exactly. After neighbors found a human skull along a busy road, which is near Bremerton, along the Dyes Inlet. The skull was found around 11 a.m. on Tuesday. Is this like when the feet were washing up on the shore? Is this that kind of thing, or is this something else? Neighbor said a woman was hanging Christmas decorations on the outside of her fence when she found a human skull on the ground. The fence is, I kind of wonder what happened to the rest of it, don't you? I'm playing the long game, by the way.
I was going to say, I had heard one report that the indication might be that the skull may have been from essentially like a cadaver lab or a medical lab.
Or it just fell off the truck?
A teaching, some sort of a teaching lab. It was used for human anatomy instruction type stuff. That was one report that I heard about why this skull may have ended up there.
Okay, I'm playing the long game over at my synagogue. I got a building that I helped build years ago, and I said if they ever tear it down long after I'm gone, they got a little surprise waiting for them in the walls. I went out and bought a plastic skeleton, and I put it in the walls because I think it's going to be pretty funny if they ever actually tear down the building. That's going to stop construction for a few hours.
Harmless prank?
Yeah. It'll be funny. I mean, I'll be dead, but it'll be fun. You know, somebody will be laughing at that. Neighbor said, I said that part already. So she said she saw a skull. So what happens is the Kitsap County Sheriff's Office said there's no evidence of a crime, and right now they don't know where the skull came from. They said it may have been used for medical or teaching purposes. Yes, teaching Hannibal Lecter or Buffalo Bill or something. So as of Wednesday, they had the people here from the Washington State Patrol's Missing and Unidentified Persons has not been contacted about this case. She said many times agencies will first try to decide if a skull is historic or used for educational purposes or if it needs to be part of an identification. While it's still unknown how or why a human skull ended up on the side of the road, neighbors hope the sheriff's office will soon find an answer. Yes, we want them to find out why there was a human skull on the side of the road. I don't think they were doing a reenactment of Shakespeare. Alas, poor Yorick. I knew him, Horatio. And then I dropped the skull on the ground because I didn't get the applause I wanted for. Well, screw these people out in Bremerton. I'm just going to leave my skull here and terrify them.
Be Bremerton's first ever Shakespeare Festival.
There we go.
We
Shakespeare
know.
In the street. No Shakespeare in the park like in New York. We're going to do Shakespeare in the street and terrify people with human skulls. What else is going on around here? Oh, apparently people are harming animals. So in this story
The Whidbey Island story?
Yeah, this is the Whidbey Island story. It's really sad.
It's sickening.
I know. So according to Cairo 7, a Whidbey Island family's two dogs were found dead after they escaped from their yard. And the Allen County Sheriff's Office is asking for help finding their killer. Who kills a dog? What kind of savage does that?
Let alone two.
Yeah.
If that's what we're talking about here with the Whidbey Island story.
By the way, knowing how things work in Washington, if they catch this person, that person's going to get the chair. Jay Inslee will reopen, the execution booth for this person, but not for all the criminals in Seattle that harm people.
Reinstate the death penalty.
Exactly. Yeah. So according to a poster from the sheriff's office, Beretta and Kimber escaped on November 19th. Deputies say somebody violently killed the dogs and dumped their bodies near a trailhead near a state park. Their collars had been removed. I mean, the owner, Jenna Smelter, says she was devastated and heartbroken. It's just kind of sickening. She told Cairo 7 she got a call that a hiker found the dogs' bodies 5 days after they disappeared. When they saw them, they were just stacked on top of each other like in the tall grass, she said. She said she's still in shock that anyone could hurt her two fur babies. She described Beretta as a 3-year-old black lab who loved people. She said she was a gentle giant, loved kids, and always got along with other pets. She said she will also miss the 2-year-old Kimber, who was full of energy. Said her tail would hit her sides from wiggling so much. She was very local, saying hi. Her third puppy, Ruger, also escaped that day but was found near the home. Smelter is grateful he is safe, but says things aren't the same without Beretta and Kimber. The house definitely feels a lot more empty, she said. It's the little things they would do every day that we don't have anymore. The sheriff's office estimates that someone killed the dogs between November 19th when they got out of their yard and November 24th. Wow, what amazing detective work. So the dogs were found 5 days later, and somebody killed the dog sometime in between those five. Wow, that is an exceptional report. Well done to the police department there, sheriff's office. A $5,000 reward is being offered for information that can help solve the case. If you have any information, tips can be emailed to tips@co.island.wa.us, or you can call 360-679-9567. What kind of a sick bastard does something like that? This reeks of homeless crime to me. Reeks of it.
Yeah, something. I mean, just the only other case that recently I can think of is we had the dog walker, the 80-year-old dog walker over in Madison Valley.
Prolific offender.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the person jumped into her car, but the suspect that's going to be charged in her murder is also charged with the death of one of the dogs she was walking.
Exactly.
And he threw it in a park garbage can shortly before he was arrested.
There's also something people seem to have forgotten, is that people who harm animals are likely to prone to harm humans, and they are more prone to becoming serial killer types. Yeah. That's a huge red flag when a kid is torturing animals or stuff that they can do something
profiling.
Else. Exactly, yeah. Right. It's a huge red flag. So, yeah, I really hope they catch this guy and he burns in hell forever. Moving on to a positive, this story has a positive ending, I should say, from Como News. Anyone with a pet knows that the cost of food and medical care have gone way up. Those expenses are so high that several pets with medical issues are now landing at local shelters. Burien Cares has about 50 dogs in a shelter right now waiting for someone to adopt them. And they just recently rescued 18 dogs at once from a hoarder's house. 18 dogs, my God. They said they were found in an environment that was extremely hoarding, filth, debris. It was horrible. They just survived off a bag of food thrown in the middle of the room. These dogs were fighting for food and did not have or know what humans were. They couldn't even find them in that mess. So what the director of the place says is that for every animal that comes in, it costs us minimally $300 to $500 just to get it vaccinated, rabies, and altered. George said that's without any extra medical issues. So those 18 dogs cost the shelter close to $10,000. Quote, I like to call us a mom-and-pop shelter. We also don't receive the funding that larger shelters like Seattle Humane receives. So when 18 dogs come in at once, they decide to give each one the name of a cookie. This is sweet. I like this. This balances out the last story. So they had molasses, cannoli, pinwheel, peanut butter, ginger snap, Milano. And Milano. Oh, right. The Pepperidge Farge ones. Yeah, yes. And I like to do it also because then we call them our cookie babies, right? So it's sort of how we lovingly refer to them within the shelter. And we'll even reminisce later. Like, you remember that one cookie baby?
Como News asked George if they could have lightened the burden by asking other local shelters to take a few of them. They said, yeah, we would transfer, but right now, pretty much everything's at capacity. Even when we reached out to Seattle Humane on these, they said they were at capacity. I mean, think about how many dogs you see with the homeless people out there.
Yeah, right.
Now, by the way, if you are on the street, you should not be allowed to have your kids with you, and you should not be allowed to have the dogs with you. And I am not advocating for child protective services. Mm-hmm. But if you can't take care of yourself, what makes you think you can take care of a child or an animal?
Yeah.
Really? When I see these guys sitting there and using the dog as a prop to get money from people off the side of the highway, I go, somebody come take that dog away. Mm-hmm. You do not deserve that animal. I mean, especially if you're using them as a prop on the side of a
highway.
That's
a rough one. I could see that one from both directions, that the companionship of the dog, that might help keep you from going crazy on the street,
too. It might, but then say, okay, there are shelters that will take you with your animal.
There's a way you can figure that out.
Exactly. Sure. There are places, low-barrier shelters, low-barrier homeless villages, apartments. I get that, but if you are not in the right state of mind to make that decision about a better place to be than the side of a freeway, you shouldn't have the animal. They also said, it was replacing the actual cash. We had to get our locks changed another day for $400. That's all money that's coming out of here to care for the animals because somebody broke into the shelter on November 19th, taking money from a cash register that's used to care for the animals. Now people are breaking into animal shelters. They're looking for drugs. That's what's going on. They're looking for drugs and medication.
Yeah, veterinarians kind of need painkillers from time to time.
They're looking for needles. That's what they're looking for. Buren police have surveillance of the break-in and are investigating. Buren Cares remains committed to caring for the animals at any cost since it is a no-kill shelter. George told Como that funding for the shelter breaks down into thirds. One-third comes from cities it contracts with, Buren and Des Moines. One-third comes from the adoption fees, and one-third comes from donations, which is the money that covers all the vet bills that they have. They say, so, if you can give, give whatever you can. If you become a monthly sustainer, that's great for any nonprofit. It's a great way to do a tax write-off at the end of the year without being so painful during the year, so any donation helps. We got a whole lot more to discuss as the show continues. This is Ari Hoffman filling in for John Carlson on Talk Radio 570. KBI. Music's a little different around here than on my show. You're listening to Ari Hoffman in for John on Talk Radio 570 KVI. It's a little bit more mellow in the morning
around
here.
We have this 60s in the 6 o'clock hour, 70s in the 7 o'clock hour, 80s in the 8 o'clock hour.
So
I'm
going to
dust off some of your favorites.
I was
going to
say, I don't know if you know which decade I was actually born in of those, sir, but yes.
I know your musical taste. That's not in dispute.
That is not. Phil, what's going on social media?
Social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. Hey, rent and mortgage are all going to be going up in Linwood. The Linwood City Council voted 4-3 to pass a property tax increase. And did you hear how big it is?
52%.
52%.
There's a bright side. No, there's a bright side to this, Phil. You're not looking at the whole picture.
Oh, really?
You have created a new generation of conservatives because all these people go, wait, you did what?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is not the 4%, 5% cost of living type number.
No.
No, this is like a wholesale 52% markup here.
I don't think any of those fools are getting
re-elected. The Linwood City Council voted 4-3, so at least there was some opposition to the vote. Most of the time we get these Seattle City Council things going on, it's like 7-0,
yeah, exactly,
5-0, 9-0, whatever. And it's going to increase the annual haul of property taxes by about $7.2 million. It's going to be a 52% increase for the person with an average home. It's going to be $144 a year more that you'll pay. So if you're an average person, you know, $144, that might be a week, 10 days, 12 days worth of groceries. But if you got a family of
what's the money going towards?
Two, three, four.
What do they need so bad?
Well, here's part of the kicker. Most of the money raised, and this is according to Channel 7's report on the city council vote in Linwood, most of the money raised will cover a lapse in funding that came from grants and one-time COVID relief money that have now expired.
So they overspent because they had all this extra money coming in and never cut it after the money was...
Yeah, or never created a plan to say, hey, look, you know, this is going to go away, the one-time COVID money. So that means whatever we were doing with that one-time COVID money, that's going to have to stop too. The story goes on to say loss of COVID funding has impacted various levels of government. They point out Tacoma and Seattle. Those city budgets are also running short now because of the loss of COVID money, and they're seeking ways to address these budget shortfalls. And the state of Washington, of course, is now facing a big projected budget gap of several billion dollars. $10 to $12 billion are some of the estimates for the state of Washington. So how was it that they got all this extra money because things got shut down? And then no one was planning for this eventuality that when it goes away, what are we going to do?
No, because they just
that
said
we're
going
to
hey,
have to do away with one service or another.
Right. They just got a spending.
How do we have these continuing failures to plan?
Because there's no responsibility. It doesn't come out of their wallet. Yeah, no they go, oh, screw it. We'll just do revenue enhancements, meaning taxes.
Yeah. I think today is the day that the statewide elections are supposed to be certified. And that means the vote on Initiative 2066 is going to get certified, and that seems to be the triggering event for what will likely be, at least we've heard, the threat of a lawsuit against Initiative 2066 by the opponents of natural gas.
Well, hang on a second. Joining us now on the Warrior Injury Law studio line is Governor Jay Inslee to talk about certifying the election.
Governor,
how are you today?
I'm going to certify this election, but right away we are going to challenge this rule in the Washington State Supreme Court. I'm going to make sure that all the miscreants that voted for this pay and don't have natural gas before I move to Idaho. Yeah.
Well, Governor, that's not very nice of you, but thank you for joining us.
Of course, at the Washington Policy Center, frequent guest on the show, the environmental policy director there, Todd Myers, has been keeping track of that. He has posted, once again, members of the Washington Building Code Council are refusing to abide by the election results, and this is undemocratic. Ironically, the Washington or the State Building Code Council, the Washington Building Code Council, or the SBCC for the State Building Code Council, broke several laws to rush recent rules into place. Their concern about making, quote, rash changes, end quote, only applies when undermining the voters. And that's what is going to happen here if the activists and Jay Inslee's allies who don't like natural gas sue to overturn Initiative 2066.
His millionaire and billionaire buddies like Nick Hanauer and Bill Gates and such.
They're openly defying democracy.
Yes, they're subverting democracy.
And they're going to couch it around, oh, there's some technicality on the single subject rule that relates to initiatives.
Like they did with the light rail.
Yeah, exactly.
Car tab stuff.
Mm-hmm. And what they're going to do is they're going to say, well, this violates a single subject. No, there's one subject, and that's the ability to access natural gas or have that choice to have natural gas in a new building project construction. But yeah, the ability to have that choice does impact several other things. So you're kind of conflating that violates a single subject rule.
Yep.
So.
Yep. This is what they do. Just wait for it. It's all coming. Right.
Now, I didn't have this on my bingo card. I'm a 55-year-old man, Ari. I don't remember this being a problem in years past. But apparently in the state of Indiana, the Indiana State Police are posting on social media a warning about seeing an increase in cars that are being decked out in festive colored lights as cars are driving down the road. And, of course, we have the less sunlight, longer darkness, longer overnight periods. Apparently people are thinking, oh, this would be a festive way to decorate the car as I'm out and about driving around. In Indiana, where this is happening, it is illegal. I'm going to guess it's probably similar here, but in all my years living here in Western Washington, I've never, ever seen any sort of vehicles that were decked out in, you know, Christmas-type lights. So
I've seen like somebody will ring the inside of the back window or something like that. I've seen little things. I've never seen anybody go full bore with it, but now it's time to keep an eye out for it.
So do that. Keep your eyes peeled.
Yeah.
Let us know. Use the KVI text line, 206-421-5757. Let us know if this is happening in Washington.
Exactly. Got a whole lot more to discuss as the show continues. You're listening to Ari Hoffman in for John on Talk Radio 570 KVI. Welcome back to The Commute with Carlson. This is Ari Hoffman filling in for John. You can catch my show every single weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. right here on Talk Radio 570 KVI. A lot of you responded to this question Phil had about the Christmas lights on the cars. We are getting our text line blown up with people saying they're seeing these things. One of them sent a picture of a car that is so covered in Christmas lights. It looks like Dynamo's car from The Running Man. With Arnold Schwarzenegger, the guy who sings opera, and then Schwarzenegger kills him spectacularly. By the way, that's a movie I would not hate the idea of a remake for.
Okay.
Because if you watch it, it's so campy and ridiculous. Mm-hmm. I think you can make a viciously brutal action movie. And it's been so long, only us old fogies would remember the original.
There's a whole element of fake news that is the cornerstone for how that story starts, too.
Yes.
Remember the way they manipulate the video
to
indict military pilot
the Butcher
Arnold
of Bakersfield. Right. Right. Yeah. Actually, you know what would be great? So I was Jesse Ventura, who was the retired guy who then they superimpose his face or whatever.
Yeah.
I think you make that character Schwarzenegger, right?
Okay.
So Schwarzenegger becomes the bad guy in the movie he was the good guy of.
Yeah.
And then you get somebody new, I don't know, a Chris Hemsworth. Yeah. Look at this. Yeah. I'm making the movie for you right now. Yeah. Look how amazing that
is. We're crowdsourcing this.
Exactly. Is it Sony Pictures? Yeah, it was Sony Pictures. Yeah. So Sony Pictures headquarters.
There's a lot of what's relevant from that 88, maybe, I think it was 87, 88 movie.
Yeah. So the building
in it, over today,
the building in it is not a weirdly designed Hollywood prop. The building in it is Sony headquarters. That's their actual headquarters.
Oh, okay.
It was that spacey looking back then.
Yeah, I don't know that there's any Richard Dawson in the 21st century that could really recreate that character.
Drew Carey.
We'll leave that aside.
Let's get Drew Carey from The Price is Right to do it. What do you mean?
Yeah,
all right. No Drew Carey. Anyway, in other news, have you guys heard about this insanity happening in New York? The assassination of the United Healthcare CEO, Brian Thompson? So according to Fox News, new evidence suggests that the suspect who assassinated this guy.
And this is all captured on security cam video in front of a big major hotel.
Oh, sure. I know the area very well.
New York, yeah.
There's a great kosher restaurant right nearby. I know exactly where this is. They may have left a message behind on the bullet casings. Police sources told the New York Post that the words deny, depose, and defend were written on the live rounds and casings left behind by the assassin after the shooting. Evidence also shows that each bullet and casing had just one word written on it, leading to them to believe that they may have been trying to leave a message. In the video obtained by Fox News Digital, Thompson is seen walking down a New York City sidewalk when a masked man wearing a black hooded jacket and a backpack walks up behind him and raises a handgun. The culprit fires off several shots. At one point, the gun appears to jam, and the assailant then appears to smack the gun on the side while walking towards the victim, who is attempting to get away. Following the shooting, the suspect walked between two vehicles, got onto a bike, and then disappeared into Central Park. It was previously reported that the suspect used a city bike, which can be tracked, but the NYPD has clarified the incident did not involve that type of bike.
So maybe bought their own, so to speak, or had their own privately purchased.
Exactly. Or, you know what? They had the electronics disabled. I mean, I see the homeless around here riding Lime bikes all the time. I assume they're not paying for them because they're usually missing some of the parts. What is this? Money train disappeared into Central Park? What, there's just a manhole cover you can pop open there and then go down into the subway tunnels? Investigators hope accompanying evidence left behind will help identify him, including a cell phone discovered in an alleyway near the hotel when the shooting occurred, as well as a cup in the trash at a nearby Starbucks. United Health Group released a statement expressing their condolences and surprise at the day's events. Anyone with information is encouraged to contact Crime Stoppers. It's crazy to me that in New York, with all the resources New York has, they haven't found this guy yet. Now, they don't even have a motive yet for what's going on, but the health insurance company has come under fire in recent months for allegedly wrongfully denying claims. According to Fox News, over the summer, nearly a dozen people were arrested in a protest outside United Healthcare parent United Health Group's headquarters in Minnesota. The demonstration was organized by People's Action Institute, a socialist group, which accused the company of refusing to pay for patients' necessary health treatments. Are you guys mad about, like, transgender surgeries or something? Because most of the big companies actually do cover that. Health insurance coverage has expanded in America, but we are finding it is private health insurance corporations themselves that are often the largest barrier for people to receive the care and the doctor they agree to. By the way, this whole thing has gotten strangely political. Have you followed this on social media at all? Because the left is celebrating this guy getting assassinated.
Oh.
And the right is saying, a guy got assassinated. Yeah. You don't like him. You don't go kill him.
Yeah.
That's the weird thing about this.
Definitely.
In response, United Health sent a statement, the safety and security of our employees is a top priority. We have resolved the member-specific concerns raised by this group and remain open to a constructive dialogue about ensuring access to high-quality, affordable care. You know, at the end of the day, guys, Obamacare made things worse for everybody. Lost my plan, lost my doctor, things cost a hell of a lot more money, and I had no pre-existing conditions. It's for a lot of people.
According to Fierce Healthcare, United Healthcare was also hit with a potential class action lawsuit earlier this month from families of two deceased Medicare Advantage patients who claimed the company used an AI-driven algorithm NaviHealth platform to deny medically necessary care. United Health spokesperson told the outlet in a statement the lawsuit has no merit and we will defend ourselves vigorously. They say the NaviHealth Predict tool is not used to make coverage determinations. The tool is used as a guide to help us inform providers, families, and other caregivers about what sort of assistance and care a patient may need, both in the facility and after returning home. Coverage decisions are based on CMS coverage criteria and the term of the member's plan. See, what's going on here is the left is saying, healthcare is a human right. Housing is a human right. Anything we want is a human right. Laser hair removal for trans people in prison is a human right. Whatever it is, that is now a human right. So the fight has become very, very political. So much so that Taylor Lorenz has gotten involved.
Now that's a name I've not heard in a long time.
Now, you may remember Taylor Lorenz. She's the dum-dum who was a columnist for the Washington Post, who was the one who doxed libs of TikTok and outed her identity and then went to all of her family members' homes. Yeah, she did this while working for the Washington Post. She wrote several social media posts appearing to celebrate the fact that UnitedHealthcare CEO Brian Thompson's murder, while suggesting other executives should be targeted as well. So, she says, and people wonder why these executives are dead, she wrote hours later on Blue Sky. By the way, why did all the pedophiles and people who want violence go over to Blue Sky? Oh, right, because they're all hardcore lefties. I don't even want to go over that cesspool. I don't go over to Gab. That's where all the right-wing psychos go over there. I don't go over there. I've actually had the platform itself attack me on Twitter. There are a bunch of lunatics over there. So, other crazy things, she also posted an image of Blue Cross Blue Shield CEO Kim Keck with a similar article on both Blue Sky and X. Talk about how she wants these people dead! She reposted another user who wrote, hypothetically, would it be considered an actionable threat to start emailing other insurance CEOs as a simple, you're next? It would be one thing if she was covering this. It'd be one thing if she was saying, hey, there's threats against CEO. She's encouraging it! She later seemed to defend the harsh post, claiming there was very justified hatred against CEOs for the amount of death and suffering for which they allegedly bear responsibility. Quote, people have very justified hatred towards insurance company CEOs because their executives are responsible for an unfathomable amount of death and suffering. As someone against death and suffering, I think it's good to call out this broken system and people in power who enable it. Hey, you going to call out what's happening in the Middle East? You going to call out Hamas? You going to call out Hezbollah? You going to call out what's happening with what? Any of this stuff? No, it's just political, so you do that. According to Fox News, Lorenz shared several posts written by other social media users attacking Thompson and seeming to justify his death through the implication that he had killed scores through inadequate health coverage. Quote, he will be shown the same empathy he showed for others every single day. Another post read, my insurance will neither cover monoclonal antibodies to prevent COVID or sufficient Paxlovid to treat COVID. They have no problem with my suffering or possible death. Murder is wrong no matter how it's done. Okay, you people are unhinged. You people are nuts. Wait a minute. Monoclonal antibodies, and this is somebody on the left? I thought those are bad.
I thought we were going back to 2020, 2021 there.
Yeah, wait a second. I thought Ron DeSantis was evil. I thought Donald Trump was evil for suggesting anything other than the jab. Another one wrote, every life is precious stuff about a healthcare CEO's company is noted for denying coverage is pretty silly. This is the nonsense you're seeing around here. Another left-leaning journalist, including Jezebel, I wouldn't call that journalism.
That website?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Staff writer Kylie Chung and journalist Ken Clipperstein.
And wasn't Jezebel in the same kind of media family as Deadspin?
Yeah.
Which sort of...
It's like a step up from The Stranger.
Or libeled somebody and was it Hulk Hogan and Hulk Hogan sued?
Well, Deadspin is about to be owned by that kid who was wearing the Chiefs makeup. He was wearing the war paint at the Chiefs game, and they accused him of being in blackface.
Yeah, right.
That kid's going to own Deadspin, assuming there's anything left to it. Chung wrote, the way we're socialized to see violence only is interpersonal, Nazi state violence, policies that create poverty or kill, structural violence, institutional violence is very deliberate. Same with panics about shoplifting. Oh, you're in the Tammy Morales family. You like that looting. Oh, yes. I'm sorry people are mad about looting. Oh,
God, give me a break. I mean, these posts go on and on and on. They don't end. Let's remember that in 2022, Taylor Lorenz infamously sobbed on air during an MSNBC interview about alleged online harassment she'd faced. And literally, she's doing it to other people. Oh, it's horrible. You remember that? God, I will never forget that. She was just shredded online for that. Lorenz then criticized the Progressive Network for how it handled the story. You're the one who broke down crying about online harassment. Hey, lady, try by being me for a day. The amount of anti-Semitism and everything else I get, please spare me. Also, weren't you the one who went to Libs of TikTok's house and her relatives' houses to dox them? Isn't that you? She went viral earlier this week when she was mad that people who are not wearing masks in 2024 were raw-dogging the air. I'm sorry, this woman is unhinged lunatic. Just like the ladies over at The View, we should stop giving her the airtime. Otherwise, she feeds on this kind of nonsense, and you get more and more and more and more. Lots more to discuss as the show continues. You're listening to Ari Hoffman sitting in for John Carlson on Talk Radio 570 KVI. Welcome back to The Commute with Carlson. This is Ari Hoffman filling in for John as the sun rises over Elliott Bay. Look at that beautiful view of the Cascades. That is magnificent. Now I know why you guys do the morning show.
Did that make it worth waking up early?
That made it worth it. This is really amazing. This is beautiful. Wish you guys were here to see it. I will take a picture of this during the next break. It's amazing how it just turns on like a light switch like that. Snuck up on me out of nowhere. This story right here should be no surprise to anybody. Wells Fargo will be putting its San Francisco headquarters on the market as soon as this month, as it becomes the latest business to flee the city by the bay. According to the Wall Street Journal, the move to sell the 409,000-square-foot office at 420 Montgomery Street in San Francisco's financial district is part of a broader shift in the bank's power base to the East Coast. All right, translation. It sucks here. Our employees are getting robbed and assaulted. We're tired of cleaning the poo off our historically beautiful building with the museum. We are out of here.
Yeah, I follow a couple of social media accounts in San Francisco that kind of document on what's going wrong. And, you know, every few days, like, here's, you know, an empty building, or now, like, this tenant, a major anchor tenant, Wells Fargo, is like, we don't need to be here anymore.
We're out of here. Now, Wells Fargo isn't leaving entirely. They do have another building in San Francisco. So what they're basically doing is they're consolidating to that location, but it's a much smaller location. And this is a beautiful building. And apparently they have a Wells Fargo museum there as well. You can see the entire history of Wells Fargo, and that's closing up, too. Now, this is the excuse all businesses always use when they leave California. A spokeswoman for Wells Fargo told the Journal that the bank continually assesses its real estate portfolio to ensure we are the best meeting the needs of the employees, customers, responding to our consumer and economic trends. That is the same nonsense they all say all the time, every single time. So this is no surprise to anybody. Something that is a surprise, there's the new district attorney in Los Angeles. This new guy, Nathan Hochman, he's the one who replaced George Gascon, the George Soros-backed district attorney who didn't believe in prosecuting crime, who things got so bad under because they released so many criminals and didn't prosecute so many criminals that his own staff was quitting and asking for people to escort them to their vehicles at night. That's how bad things got. In fact, they had to provide a shuttle service, if I recall, because things had gotten so bad. So apparently, right when he came into office, he said district attorneys must only have two things as their North Stars, the facts and the laws. I reject blanket extreme policies on both sides of the pendulum swing. Decarceration policies that predetermine that certain crimes and certain criminals are not going to be prosecuted, and mass incarceration policies that are also not anchored in the facts of law. So apparently what he did was he sent out this notice to the entire staff saying every policy that Gascon did, he wrote this nicer, of course, I'm rescinding. You are to prosecute cases. You are to go for the maximum penalty. You are to go after prolific offenders because Los Angeles has become unlivable. The last time I was there, I almost didn't recognize the place. It had gotten so bad. So good on California for finally turning things around. The question is, why can't we be as smart here in Seattle? Lots more to discuss as the show continues. You're listening to Ari Hoffman sitting in for John on Talk Radio 570 KVI. What a beautiful day it is with the sun coming up over Elliott Bay. It is gorgeous out there. Your radio sound a little louder this morning. It's Ari Hoffman, your afternoon drive host, filling in for John today and tomorrow. John will be back on Wednesday, but you got somebody other than me filling in for John on Monday and Tuesday. Yesterday, we discussed the Supreme Court of the United States hearing arguments with the case of the United States versus Scrimeti, which is the Tennessee trans case. Tennessee banned the practice of medical sex change for minors in the state. An activist with the ACLU and the Biden-Harris administration, specifically the Justice Department, took up a suit against Tennessee, saying that banning sex changes is discrimination on the basis of sex. Now, this argument did not hold up at all under questioning from the justices. Yesterday, we played this clip for you with Justice Alito destroying the ACLU attorney.
True in every respect, but on page 195 of the Cass report, it says, there is no evidence that gender affirmative treatments reduce suicide.
What I think that is referring to is there is no evidence in some in the studies that this treatment reduces completed suicide.
Okay, enough of the nonsense. This completed suicide. What, you tried to kill yourself? You didn't quite get there? No, Alito called it out. You guys say this is a medically necessary procedure because people who don't get to be trans want to kill themselves, as opposed to saying, hey, maybe there's a mental disorder at play here. These guys say, hey, let's start hacking up your body. It doesn't make any sense. Alito had another great moment.
A question about the state of medical evidence at the present time. In your petition, you made a sweeping statement, which I will quote. Overwhelming evidence establishes that the appropriate gender-affirming treatment with puberty blockers and hormones directly and substantially improves the physical, psychological well-being of transgender adolescents with gender dysphoria. That was in November 2023. Now, even before then, the Swedish National Board of Health and Welfare wrote the following. They currently assess, quote, that the risks of puberty blockers and gender-affirming treatment are likely to outweigh the expected benefits of these treatments, which is directly contrary to the sweeping statement in your petition. After the filing of your petition, of course, we saw the release of the Cass report in the United Kingdom, which found a complete lack of high-quality evidence showing that the benefits of the treatments in question here outweigh the risks. And so I wonder if you would like to stand by the statement that you made in your petition, or if you think it would now be appropriate to modify that and withdraw the statement that there is overwhelming evidence establishing that these treatments have benefits that greatly outweigh the risks and the dangers.
I, of course, acknowledge, Justice Alito, that there is a lot of debate happening here and abroad about the proper model of delivery of this care and exactly when adolescents should receive it and how to identify the adolescents for whom it would be helpful.
So what you're saying is you don't actually know the answer. You're saying this thing helps kids' mental health, but you have literally no evidence to back it up. And in fact, you have evidence to the contrary. And something else, nobody's tracking the amount of people who are detransitioning. This is the insanity that the left is pushing. Well, we just want everybody to feel comfortable in their own skin, as opposed to saying, hey, maybe you need mental health treatment because you want to cut off pieces of your anatomy. Maybe you should be saying, hey, we should send this kid for counseling. But no, no, no. Now they're saying, no, no, go to the doctor and get a life-altering procedure that is irreversible and make sure you can never have kids. And make sure you are going to have medical problems for the rest of your life. And have medical procedures for the rest of your life. Now, the liberal justices really made morons out of themselves yesterday and had everybody questioning why these people are up there. So here was Sonia Sotomayor's, Justice Sonia Sotomayor's, huge contribution to the conversation.
Cannot eliminate the risk of detransitioners. So it becomes a pure exercise of weighing benefits versus risk. And the question of how many minors have to have their bodies irreparably harmed for unproven benefits is one that is best left.
I'm sorry, Counselor. Every medical treatment has a risk.
Okay. I'm stopping it right there for a second. First of all, you're going to say every medical, this is an elective surgery. You don't have to get it. You don't have to cut off pieces of your anatomy. You can go for mental health counseling instead. But then what she says next is bonkers.
Even taking aspirin.
Yes.
Medically risky choice of aspirin?
So risky. So, oh, wait, it's a blood thinner. So if you're on blood thinners, you shouldn't be taking aspirin.
Yeah.
Yeah. You take your life in your hands. Every time you take an aspirin, you might choke on one of them. One of the worst takes I've ever heard in this whole thing. But let us continue.
There is always going to be a percentage of the population under any medical treatment that's going to suffer a harm.
Stop. If this is a harm, why are you doing it? If it is a harm that is not making people's lives better, why are you doing it? You are literally defeating the argument you are trying to make with this silliness. And people's lives are at risk. You are saying, okay, we want you to get the surgery, which means you're going to have a lifetime of surgeries to maintain this thing, a lifetime of drugs you have to take. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? You know, I knew a kid once who had the desire, was thinking about transitioning. And then, you know what? Hormones kicked in, and now they're happily married. And it's because when you're a hormonal teenage mess, you shouldn't be making any decisions. None whatsoever that are life-altering at that age. Because you have hormone imbalances, because your body's developing and weird things are happening and you're sweating all the time.
Yeah,
teenagers are disgusting.
I know four teenagers right now that have undergone or proceeded with the gender switch.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a 16-year-old son. He's almost 17. So a couple of these are classmates. One's a classmate sibling. One's a friend of his cousin. And I look at this on the macro level. I'm like, how do we have tens and tens and tens and tens of thousands of years of humanity? And now all of a sudden, the last 5 or 10 years, we've had this, conversation or we've gotten to this point where, like, no, you're not a man, you're not a woman, you're not a boy, you're not a girl, and you can just pick and choose and switch. I'm like, it's so mind-boggling,
it's
right?
A social contagion also.
Yeah, yeah.
And also, these kids go, so I saw this, Emily Randall, who just won for Congress here in Washington.
State representative, or was she a state senator out of Bremerton? But
now has won a spot
in Congress.
So she went out to Capitol Hill, probably for one of the orientations they have for new members of Congress.
Capitol Hill in D.C.
In D.C., yeah. Not our Capitol Hill. No rioting this weekend. So what happens is she heads on out there, and she makes a video with other members of the LGBTQ caucus. These are the new members of the caucus. And one goes, I'm lesbian, and one goes, I'm bi, and she goes, I'm Q. Now, as a Star Trek fan, I went, you are most certainly not. That's number one.
Two different things.
But then I'm like, you're Q? Are you the dude with the antlers in the Capitol? Is that the Q we're talking about?
QAnon?
What does Q even mean? Isn't Emily Randall married? I mean, I don't
know
these things.
Is it queer?
But what is that? Sure, questioning? Right? Hey, I got a lot of questions. I ask questions every day. I guess I'm Q then. Yeah. What does that actually mean? Everybody's just trying to check a box. It is a social contagion. And when kids at school go, well, I'm just a kid. I got nothing special about me.
Yeah,
well,
right.
All those kids are getting the special treatment over there. Maybe I should do whatever they're doing.
Yeah, there's a little bit of social clout that comes with it, maybe.
Of course there is. That's exactly what's happening. However, the worst argument of the day was Ketanji Brown Jackson, who every time she opens her mouth reminds us of what a terrible pick she was of Joe Biden. It's like Kamala Harris.
Being drawn by the statute. That was sort of like the starting point. The question was whether it was discriminatory because it applied to both races and it wasn't, you know, necessarily invidious or whatever. But, you know, as I read the statute here, the case here, You know, the court starts off by saying that Virginia is now one of 16 states which prohibit and punish marriages on the basis of racial classifications. And when you look at the structure of that law, it looks in terms of, you can't do something that is inconsistent with your own characteristics. It's sort of the same thing. So it's interesting to me that we now have this different argument, and I wonder whether Virginia could have gotten away with what they did here by just making a classification argument the way that Tennessee is in this case.
Yes, I think that's exactly right, that there is absolutely a parallel between any law that says you can't act inconsistent with a protected characteristic and in all other
Hang on. If you didn't follow that, here's what she was doing. She was comparing the Tennessee law banning gender transitions for minors to previous laws that banned interracial marriage.
Yeah, Virginia versus Loving was very famous, or maybe it was Loving versus Virginia, but took on a ban in Virginia of interracial marriage.
Right. Yeah. That's what she's talking about. And how do you even get there? Is it just, oh, somebody was discriminated against? I feel these people are being discriminated against. The jump you have to make here, Colin Rugg posted on social media. If you don't follow his account, you should. Yes, because banning a white person from marrying a black person is the same thing as cutting off a 10-year-old's genitals. He's 100% right. 100% right. Somebody else said, how can someone who doesn't know what a woman is rule on a case involving gender? I do like that one the best, which is 100% accurate. I mean, crazy, crazy stuff. Every time she opens her mouth, she proves just how unserious she is. Now, the ACLU lawyer made terrible arguments the entire time. I'm not saying it just because I disagree with them. I'm saying because they were terrible arguments. You had nothing to back up anything you said. But here was one of the worst ones of the day.
I would say is nobody has to provide this medication to adolescents. These are not doctors being forced to provide this medication. These are doctors who are wanting to treat their patients in the best way that they know how, based on the best available evidence to us. And these are young people who may have known since they were 2 years old exactly who they are, who suffered for 6-7 years before they had any...
Hang on. Doctor's first oath, Hippocratic oath, is do no harm. This is harm. That's number one. Second of all, you think a 2-year-old has any knowledge of this stuff whatsoever? It reminds me of the study. The study they did years and years and years ago, and every time they try to replicate it, it's the exact same thing, where they put baby boys on the floor, baby girls on the floor, when they're about a year and a half, 2 years old, and they put out a bunch of toys. And the boys go for the trucks and the G.I. Joes, and the girls go for the pink stuff. That's just the way it is.
Or the dolls.
Exactly.
The dolls, yeah.
The only way a kid is thinking about their gender at two is if the parent is thinking about their gender at two, because the only thing a kid thinks about when they're 2 years old is, where's the cookie? I want the cookie. And do I have to pee in that toilet thing, or can I just do it in this thing that I'm wearing around my waist? That's all they are considering at that age. Can I walk yet? Can I talk yet? At two? What are you talking about?
Relief. And what's happening here, it's not the kids who are consenting to this treatment, it's the parents who are.
Yes! The parents are harming the kids, but shouldn't we look out for them? If a parent is abusing a kid, we yank the kid out of the home. If a parent is a drug addict, not in Washington, but if a parent is a drug addict, we get the kid out of the home, not in Washington.
Like you pointed out a couple moments ago, the social contagion part of it, that, you know, now my kid is transitioning, now my kid is different, unique, special, you know, one of one, that I think there are definitely examples of parents who have pursued this with their own child or approved of this for their own child, thinking that they're going to get a reward out of this.
Yeah, I saw a social media post. I don't know if it's true. Apparently, Charlize Theron, the actress, apparently she adopted two black children.
I heard about an adoption case with her.
Yeah, so apparently she adopted two black males, children, right? Two black boys. And she's got both of them running around in tutus and stuff. Mm-hmm. So you're trying to transition these two black kids you adopted, what are you doing?
Really wants them in the ballet arts.
Yeah, but it's not a matter of the ballet arts. This is just how they're dressed. Mm-hmm. It'd be one thing if you said, well, they really like dancing. There are men who are in the ballet.
Right.
There's the Riverdance dude who does whatever he does. I mean, that's fine. But here, no, you're dressing them that way because you want to be trendy.
Kind of get that outcome.
Exactly. That outcome. What other craziness did this person say?
We're consenting to the treatment. And as a parent, I would say, when our children are suffering, we are suffering. And these are parents who love their children, who are listening to the advice of their doctors, of the mainstream medical community, and doing what's right for their kids. And the state of Tennessee has displaced their judgment.
This is not the mainstream medical community. Not by any stretch of the imagination. Because you just said 2 minutes ago, the science does not back this up. Though, to be fair, the mainstream medical community has made a lot of decisions the science doesn't back up. Anybody here remember COVID? Remember all that insanity? But here, no, this is not mainstream. This is fringe. And anybody who's being honest about it goes, this is crazy. How come it is that, like, teenage kids who want to go get their ears pierced or something need their parents' permission? Or get a waxing, need their parents' permission. Or even sometimes a tattoo, need their parents' permission. But you want to start chemically castrating yourself or cutting things off? No, you can just go do it and some doctor will back you up. These are not doctors. If they actually cared about treating these kids, there would be counseling that's part of this beforehand. You want to do whatever you want to do when you're an adult. We can argue over it's when you're 18. We can argue if it's when you're 20. We can have that conversation. But it's clearly not when you're 2 years old or 4 years old or even 10 years old. Yeah, I think I still wanted to be a pirate when I was six. I think I wanted to be Luke Skywalker when I was 7 or 8. You grow out of these dumb things. It is social contagion for sure. And any doctor who does these surgeries, they don't care about their patients. They are just doing it for the money. Absolutely. Or for their own politics. One reason or the other. Because they don't care about their patients, to subject them to a procedure that's going to cause them not to be able to have children that there is no reversing as they get older. But on top of that, you have to have procedures for the rest of your life, take drugs for the rest of your life that are harmful. That is not in anybody's best interest. Lots more discuss as the show continues when we come back. Phil will have all the crazy stuff the socialists on social media are up to. You're listening to Ari Hoffman in for John Carlson. Talk Radio 570 KVI. Oh, those pesky socialists. They're so entertaining. At least we're down one of them with Tammy Morales calling it quits. That's Phil, true. What do
Seattle
you got
City
for
Council.
Us? Yeah, exactly.
Social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. Big story here the last day, well, back several days, I guess now, is the status of Pete Hegseth as Trump's nominee for the Secretary of Defense. So he went on Megyn Kelly. And he went on Megyn Kelly's either serious show, satellite XM show, or her podcast. And she asked him about these accusations about the excessive drinking, mm-hmm. as an example. And so I think the way this is going to start off, Megyn Kelly seems to be referencing a they, as it might refer to fellow soldiers that Pete Hegseth may have served with in Iraq. I think that's what the they reference is. But listen to this, and then I'll tell you what a progressive left-wing social media political critic had to say about what Pete Hegseth, how Pete Hegseth answered this. So here's Megyn Kelly kind of asking Pete Hegseth about this.
They're not upset about your drinking?
you know what? There's an interesting one there. First of all, never had a drinking problem. No one's ever approached me and said, "Oh, you should really look at getting help for a drink." Never. I've never sought counseling. Never sought help. I respect and appreciate people who do. But you know, what do guys do when they come back from war? Oftentimes, have some beers. You know, how do you deal with the demons you see on the battlefield? Sometimes it's with a bottle. Unfortunately, tragically, for too many guys, it's with the bottle, and then it's depression and even worse, suicide. I mean, we've got an epidemic of that in our country. Thank God, by the grace of God, I found my chapters of purpose that pulled me out of that.
So is there something objectionable about that answer? And I ask because one of these left-wing, Democratic, pro-Biden, anti-Trump social media handle profiles is a guy named Aaron Rupar. Maybe you've come across
him. No, he's a lunatic. He's an absolute lunatic.
Right. And so Aaron Rupar posted this video clip of Pete Hegseth's answer to Megyn Kelly and said, Pete Hegseth isn't beating the drinking problem allegations with a response like this. And I listened to that response and I thought, What's objectionable about what he said?
Everything's objectionable.
Well, if if you've got a political axe to grind, sure.
So Aaron Ruppert, everything's objectionable
sure.
to him?
Sure.
There's nothing about that. They just don't like that he's denying it.
Yeah.
That's their problem with it.
So that was the reason I wanted to bring that one up. I mean, here's Pete Hegseth talking about, sure, yes, I've had drinks. I mean, what Pete Hegseth is describing...
It's the Kavanaugh thing.
Would potentially apply... to someone like me.
Yeah.
I mean, my intoxicant of choice would be some form of alcohol.
Yeah.
And,
every Sabbath you come to my synagogue, you're going to be like, that's right? A lot of alcohol they got put out there.
From time to time, you string one on, but I've never had anyone come up to me and go, Phil, you're out of control.
No.
You need to cut back, that sort of thing. So, I mean, we'll see how this all shakes out. But based on this left-wing social media guy's concern about this, I'm like, I don't come across anything objectionable about that answer.
So don't forget, they did this to Kavanaugh when Kavanaugh said, I like to drink beers. They're like, how dare you?
Yeah, he's
how
like,
dare
we
you?
Drink let's, beer. We
let's
like
occupy
to drink
the Capitol. Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Crazy stuff.
Elon Musk posted the following. Defund the ACLU.
Yes.
And then another left-wing social media personality who I hear ends up on NPR interviews. She's from Oregon. Her name is Rachel Bitekofer. And she posted, Mr. Free Speech Elon Musk wants to crush the ACLU. I'm like, I don't think that he wants to crush the ACLU.
No.
He didn't say abolish the ACLU. He said defund the ACLU.
If they're getting government money, I ask why.
Yeah.
Why does the government need to fund the ACLU versus other
nonprofits? I don't know that the ACLU gets government funding per se, but they obviously get donations to keep their operation going.
And by the way, that's fine, but if they are getting government grants, they should be
private market-wise, that's the way it should be.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
So I like how she put words in his mouth, though. But you go back to all the people that had the, hey, abolish the police department or, those sorts of things. That was how that tended to get portrayed. So that is the other one that I wanted to bring up for you.
Oh, crazy stuff. I mean, they couldn't defund the stuff fast enough. It's like the free market. Let the free market decide. People want to fund Planned Parenthood. They can fund that. But the government shouldn't be funding that, especially with your taxpayer dollars. Lots more to discuss as the show continues. This is Ari Hoffman filling in for John Carlson on Talk Radio 570 KVI. Welcome back to The Commute with Carlson. This is your afternoon drive host, Ari Hoffman, filling in for John. You can catch my show every single weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. right here on Talk Radio 570 KVI. And this week during our Good News giveaway at 5:45, we are giving away not just a $50 Daniel's Broiler gift card, not just a copy of A Retirement Guide, but we are also giving away tickets to Back to the Future, the musical. Yet another reason, always keep your radio tuned to 570 KVI. Left on your dial, always right on the issue. You can also stream us at KVI.com, download the KVI app, and, of course, subscribe to us on whatever your preferred podcast platform is. Last week, we were doing the story about the illegal immigrant who shot a Jewish man in Chicago, opened fire on first responders, and how he planned to also target Jewish community institutions, synagogues, community centers, and such. Well, he was found dead in his jail cell on Saturday. This comes after the suspect was seen on video shooting first responders while yelling Allahu Akbar after he shot a Jewish man. And yet Chicago officials refused to call it an act of terror, refused to even call it a hate crime. Sidi Mohammed Abdali. Oh, man, I thought for sure he was Presbyterian. An illegal immigrant from Mauritania was found dead in an apparent suicide attempt by hanging. Jail staff were conducting a routine check in the jail's medical facility and found him dead in a cell, Cook County Sheriff's officials said after the incident. Staff attempted life-saving measures and took him to a hospital, but he was pronounced dead. Although authorities claimed there was no evidence of foul play in his death, the Illinois State Police Public Integrity Task Force will conduct an investigation as well. Yes, I'm sure it'll be as thorough as Epstein's investigation. On October 26, he was taken into custody after reportedly shooting a Jewish man who was walking to synagogue in Chicago. Now, this guy opened fire on the first responders, was yelling Allahu Akbar, and yet they won't call it hate crime. And they wouldn't call it terrorism. Now, all of a sudden, they're saying, hey, maybe it was terrorism. This was an illegal immigrant who never should have been in this country in the first place. How many more like him are out there? Our borders are wide open. But Joe Biden seems fine with terrorism. On Black Friday, Joe Biden, while vacationing in Nantucket, was seen leaving a bookstore with a copy of a book that described the establishment of Israel as colonialism and justifies terrorist attacks as Palestinian resistance.
Yeah, I saw people pointing this out. Look at this book that Biden is holding in his arms.
Yes.
And like somebody else pointed out, you know, you could have had a staffer hold this, you know, and then it wouldn't have been nearly as much attention.
No, Joe
Biden. Maybe it would have just been curious if a staffer was holding it. But here's Biden holding this book based on this subject matter.
He's trying to screw everybody on the way out. He's trying to say, screw you, Israel, screw you, the party, everything. He's trying to screw everybody.
Yeah, it would throw everything into question of how much support there is from Biden himself for Israel.
Well, this answers a lot, given the fact that he has slow-walked support. By the way, even cases causes he cares about, like Ukraine, he slow-walked aid to them. He has stretched this war out longer than it ever should have gone for. According to the New York Post, the octogenarian was photographed leaving Nantucket Bookworks alongside his wayward son, Hunter, carrying the Hundred-Year War on Palestine, a history of settler colonialism, conquest, and resistance, 1917 through 2017. Interesting. I like that you started after 1912. You left out the Hebron massacre, where a whole bunch of Palestinians killed a whole bunch of Jews, and there was no state of Israel yet. Yeah, left out a whole bunch of that kind of stuff, didn't you? The book is written by Columbia University professor emeritus Rashib Khalidi, who it seems like his entire job is to say Jews suck. That's what he does. In the book, Khalidi, who is of Palestinian and Lebanese descent, claims the modern history of Palestine can be best understood in these terms: as a colonial war waged against the indigenous population by a variety of parties to force them to relinquish their homeland to another people against their will. You know, that's right. People keep coming after them Jews. Oh, you're not talking about the Jews. You're talking about the other guys. I see. Khalidi also said that President-elect Donald Trump's first administration was a mouthpiece for Israel and claimed press coverage is slanted in favor of Israel. Have you ever watched PBS? Have you ever watched MSNBC? Have you ever read the New York Times? Have you ever read the Washington Post? Have you ever read the Seattle Times? Have you ever read any of this? What the hell are you talking about? You ever seen CNN? These guys are all anti-Israel. Oh, how about BBC? Khalidi slammed Trump for moving the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem and recognizing Israel's annexation of the Golan Heights. Khalidi praised the first intifada between 1987 and 1993 by Palestinian terrorists against Israel, which killed over 2,000 Israelis, including Christians and Muslims. Great book you're reading here, Joe Biden. He wrote, the first intifada was an outstanding example of popular resistance against oppression and can be considered as being the first unmitigated victory for the Palestinians in the long colonial war that began in 1917. Victory? What victory came out of that? You just killed a bunch of people, you psycho. Biden has been heavily criticized for lifting sanctions on Iran, refunding the Palestinian Authority, knowing that American taxpayer dollars would go to their pay-for-slay program, which rewards terrorists for killing Israelis. Both actions have been pointed to as factors that contribute to the October 7th massacre of 1,200 Israelis and the kidnapping of 250 more. Biden was photographed with the book only 3 days after reportedly forcing Israel into a ceasefire with Hezbollah, which, by the way, isn't holding, by the way. You know the sneaky way they're trying to get around that? So the Lebanese government is saying, well, the attacks were by Hezbollah, and you made the peace deal with the Lebanese government. And I say, what's the difference? Ah, yes. One goes din, 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 and the other goes din, 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 din. The making this deal was stupid because the Lebanese government has never been able to control Hezbollah.
Thank you, MC Ice.
You got that. Yeah. No. We've got the Vanilla Ice. If we ever want his political commentary, we've got the Vanilla Ice always ready to go. I mean, here you go. Okay, let's ask him his opinion. I mean, you know, stop. Let's collaborate and listen.
It's not the same. Ours goes ding, 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 diggy, ding, ding. Ding, 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 diggy, ding, ding. Ding, ding, ding. That's the way theirs goes. Ours goes ding, 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 diggy, ding, ding. Ding, 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 diggy, ding, ding. That little bitty change. It's not the same.
See, that's the difference between Hezbollah and Lebanese government.
Thanks, Ice.
No, yeah, exactly. So he had the book. Critics claim that Biden threatened to withhold weapon shipments to Israel if Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu didn't agree to a ceasefire. Earlier this year, the president paused shipments of 2,000-pound bombs to Israel. Biden has also upped his criticism of the Jewish state, and Netanyahu has even reportedly used expletives to describe the prime minister behind closed doors. So Joe Biden walking around with this sucker? Yeah, tell me again how he's pro-Israel, because I can give you a laundry list of how he's not. In other crazy news, you may not know what Steam is. Steam is a platform you can download video games off of. Well, now they are offering a video game where you can reenact the October 7th massacre as a Hamas terrorist.
Wow.
Yeah, it's insane. Al Jameer first reported that Fursan al-Aqsa, the Knights of the Al-Aqsa Mosque, which was released on April 2022, was updated to now allow players to recreate the actions of Palestinian terrorists, including attacking an Israeli military base with paragliders, just as Hamas did on October 7th. The trailer for the update features a narrator in Arabic saying, "Where are those who carry the explosive belts? Where are they? Come here, I want an explosive belt to blow up myself over the Zionists. It's a jihad of victory and martyrdom."
Yeah, if they do that, you'd think, why not reenact something with September 11th?
Exactly.
Wouldn't that be the next question?
I wouldn't be surprised if there was something like that on that website. By the way, you can get this thing in America. America and Canada. U.S. and Canada both have this. The outlet discovered gameplay footage on YouTube showing Palestinian terrorists chanting Allahu Akbar and "From the river to the sea, Palestine will be free," a call for the genocide of all Jews and the destruction of Israel. Players can dress their avatars in terrorist keffiyehs and colors. The Israeli forces in the game are targeted with an inverted red triangle above them, a popular video game feature for the enemy that has been incorporated into Hamas propaganda videos and vandalism. When a player is killed in the game, the screen displays a bloody hand over a Palestinian flag and says, "You became a martyr. Rejoice, O mother of the martyr, rejoice. Prepare your son for his marriage in paradise. Tie the band on all your pain and spread his wedding handkerchief. Spread your anger against the oppressor. His injustice must be stopped." Before the update, the game already featured in the opening credits a Palestinian terrorist wearing a suicide bomb vest. The game's narrator is identified as Abu Ubaidah, an actual Hamas spokesperson for the terrorist organization's Al-Qassam Brigades. He states in Arabic, "Today is the day of revenge. I will make you taste the pain and burn you like rats. We are people who never surrender. We either win because we become martyrs, a.k.a. terrorists, and both are victory," as the terrorist detonates the bomb vest to kill Israeli soldiers. The game developer is a Brazilian-Palestinian and said the game is a message of protest against the Israeli military occupation of the Palestinian lands. He claimed that his father is a former Palestinian fighter. "Oh, your father's a former terrorist?" And he said that he worked for the U.S. designated terrorist group Fatah, previously led by mass murderer Yasser Arafat. After Steam was contacted by the UK's Digital Counterterrorism Unit, the game was blocked from use in the country. However, as of Monday, the game is still accessible for Canadian and American users on the platform and was even discounted and promoted for Black Friday, which is sick. By the way, this may be a direct violation of U.S. anti-terror laws and be subject to potential civil litigation, according to ILF. That's the International Legal Forum CEO, Aaron Ostrovsky. He said that Steam not blocking the game may lead his organization to consider pursuing immediate legal action. He says it's not merely a game, but a display in utter sadism. A glorification of the barbaric atrocities of October 7th, the creator is effectively contributing to the recruitment and radicalization of potential terrorists, inciting them to recreate and carry out such gruesome acts of violence. This may place both the creator of the game and the distributor Steam, the parent company Valve, in direct violation of Canada's anti-terror legislation and criminal code. So, question is, are they actually going to do anything about it here in the U.S. or Canada? Because we know that a lot of these guys are radicalized online, and this is one of the ways they do it. Only good news to wrap up the show. Coming up next, good news headlines. You're listening to Ari Hoffman sitting in for John on Talk Radio 570 KVI. Only good news to wrap up another amazing episode right here on Talk Radio 570 KVI. And to start our good news headlines, we have a great cause you can be part of today. It's the 15th annual Fallen Officer Food Drive to benefit Emergency Food Network and Blood Drive to support Bloodworks Northwest from 6 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. at the Lakewood Police Station. During this event, people are encouraged to bring non-perishable food items to the parking lot across from the police station at 9401 Lakewood Drive South. Drop items with volunteers who will be out all day waving signs. Monetary donations will also be accepted. If you can't make it,
You can also drop off non-perishable food in EFN collection bins during December 2nd through 9th at the following locations. The Lakewood Police Department, which we mentioned already, Lakewood City Hall on Main Street, Blue Steel Coffee, which is at 11401 Steel Street, Classy Chassis Car Wash and Detail, which is at 7432 Custer Road, Lakewood Classic Coffee at 7609 Custer Road, University Place Classic Coffee at 4828 Bridgeport Way West. The blood drive is also December 5th at the station, that's today, from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. by appointment only, so you can sign up online, and there's a link right here at the City of Lakewood with sponsor code 4109. You want to make a donation online? You can donate money through the Emergency Food Network website. And in the notes section, please list that's for the Lakewood Police Fallen Officer Food Drive. A great cause, would be great if you can help them out.
Yeah, it was 2009. The ambush on the four police officers, one a police sergeant, Mark Renninger, then officers Ronald Owens, Tina Griswold, Greg Richards, and this is all to commemorate their murder, their ambush, and try and create something that benefits and is positive for the community there in the South Sound.
Right. So head on over to cityoflakewood.us, cityoflakewood.us, and help a great, great cause today. In other good news, sales of Bibles in the United States have surged 22% through the end of October compared to the same period last year. This rise comes despite overall print book sales increasing by less than 1% during the same time frame. Experts and industry insiders, according to the Wall Street Journal, attribute the growth in Bible sales to societal anxieties and in search of hope. Quote, people are experiencing anxiety themselves and they're worried for their children and grandchildren, says Jeff Crosby, president of the Evangelical Christian Publishers Association. He says it's related to artificial intelligence, election cycles, and all that feeds a desire for assurances that we're going to be okay. Bethany Martin, who's the manager of Faith and Life Bookstore in Newton, Kansas, noted that many of her customers are first-time Bible buyers. They're looking for hope with the world the way it is, that the Bible is what they're reaching for. She says that her store carries over 270 versions of the Bible in various sizes and print points. I kind of wonder how many copies I have at my house because I've got various commentaries on all of them. So, yeah, I'd actually love to know how many of those I actually have in my house. I do have the Lee Greenwood Bible as well.
Did you pick one of those
which
up?
He gave it to me at the RNC and he signed it. And then he drew a giant cross on it. So that does not go on the shelf with the Jewish books. That goes somewhere else.
Yeah, I've got several that I've received as a kid growing up. I was born and raised Lutheran, and I have more than enough, but I you know,
could always use more.
Yeah, well, exactly, right? That's that trick. You have one that usually does you enough, but these are really keepsakes and more or less family heirlooms.
Sure. So I like interesting ones. So, for example, I've got one that was designed for Jews serving in the U.S. military, and the cover is camouflaged. That's a little mini guy. I like the creative ones. Yeah. Those are always very fun for me.
Built with a purpose, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Now, I do love that the Bible is always the number one bestseller in the world, and yet it's never listed on the New York Times bestseller list. I guess Moses was the original victim of cancel culture by the New York Times. Well, my friends, that's going to wrap it up for us today. But don't worry, you got me back here today from 3 to 6 p.m., and I'll be with you tomorrow for John's show and my show. Markley Van Camp and Robbins is up next, followed by Lars Larson, then me. You've been listening to Ari Hoffman sitting in for John on Talk Radio 570 KVI.